with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and it is cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to this Tuesday evening edition of The Horn. Tuesday afternoon, Tuesday morning, sometime Wednesday morning. Hey, just glad you're here. Glad you're along for the little three-hour ride this evening. I suspect we've got some catching up to do from last night's Moran Monday edition, because we ran out of time before we ran out of Morans. And then there's, you know, news that actually happened today, and we'll catch up with that too. We've got, you know, I'm inclined to start. Well, okay, let me start with a correction, and never let it be said that I don't admit when I screw up. And you know, that's one of those things that just sets us so dramatically apart from right-wing radio. It's not that they're never wrong. They are almost consistently always wrong. They just won't admit it. I, however, will. I was doing my daily wander over at Crooks and Liars earlier today. And apparently, this business of the Right Network that we talked about last night at the beginning of the program, well, it's for real, but Comcast is doing everything in its power to make it plain that it has nothing to do with funding it. Apparently that was started by a little bit of advocacy on the part of the fine folks over at Crooks and Liars, because it had that post had a lot of damning evidence in it. Because, you see, Comcast is very much in the middle of a great big buyout of, NBC. Oy, that'll be good. How in God's name could that possibly pass any sort of antitrust muster? I don't know. Included in the deal, by the way, will be MSNBC. Gee, it was nice. Sure did enjoy having your program, Keith, Rachel. That was real nice while it lasted. Because, well, I'm suspicious of the thugs at Comcast's willingness to continue to run it. That's all it is. It's my suspicion. It's no hard fact or anything. But Kelsey Grammer, remember Frasier? You know, it was one of the wittiest programs on television. And Kelsey Grammer turns out to be a disgusting wingnut. And you know what? You tell me, is this a personality flaw on my part? A character flaw? When I find out that somebody is a hardcore disgusting wingnut, I can hardly stand to hear their voice or see their image. The woman who played Ray Romano's wife on the otherwise enjoyable Everybody Loves Raymond, wingnut. And from that day to this, I can't click across a rerun of Everybody Loves Raymond and stop, because I realize that even by giving a little bit of my time and watching it, I am putting money in that filthy wingnut's pockets. And the same with, you know, the same with Kelsey Grammer. Frasier was one of the most brilliantly written situation comedies, of, you know, the last 30 years. It was brilliant, and it was truly an ensemble cast. It was well acted, well written, well directed, everything. But now when I see it on late at night, I gotta click past. Because I cannot participate, and maybe I'm just way over the top on this, but I cannot participate in the immoral, unethical choice that is required in order to further enrich, even at a tremendous distance, a filthy wingnut like Kelsey Grammer. I just can't. I can't. And so it is that Kelsey Grammer is the driving force behind Right Network. And so it was that Crooks and Liars focused on this Right Network business and seemed to uncover facts that would indicate that Comcast was knee-deep in the hoopla in the launch of Right Network. And just for the sake of knowledge, which is so much of what this program is about, when Comcast, not if, but when Comcast gets its tentacles around NBC, which after all at present is owned by GE, so, you know, GE, we bring good bombs to light. Yeah, what will Comcast be owning? Well, they're going to get NBC Universal. And that means they'll get 13 cable channels, including the Weather Channel, Sundance Channel, NBC, A&E Television, Telemundo, Universal Pictures, Bravo, CNBC, MSNBC, and the Sci-Fi Channel. They will get the internet properties MSNBC.com, CNBC.com, NBC.com, iVillage.com, and an ownership stake in Hulu. Fox and ABC are also part of Hulu, so it won't be total channel mastery over Hulu. Comcast will also take control of Universal Studios Hollywood, Universal Studios Florida, and two other Florida resorts. They will get the rights to all music, film, and television properties currently owned by Universal, and you can't even begin to make a list of that. Let's see, they'll get themselves some television affiliates in Los Angeles, San Diego, San Francisco, Dallas, Fort Worth, Philadelphia, Chicago, New York City, Washington, D.C., Miami, Las Vegas, Tucson, Denver, Phoenix, Boston, and several other large markets. They'll get resorts in Florida, Japan, and California. They'll get Ticketmaster and Live Nation. And you'll get, we as the viewing, listening, watching, entertained public, will get, and I don't want to put too fine a point on it, screwed. So anyway, a retraction on my part for having said that Comcast had its hands in the Right Network, sending a note to John Amato at Comcast saying, "We have no partnership with this venture and have no plans to launch or distribute the network. As we have done with hundreds of other content providers, we have met with the network's representatives. We do carry a number of independent networks on Comcast representing a wide variety of interests and diverse viewpoints." Yeah, including 3 whole hours, well, okay, 2 hours and sorta an hour, of liberal programming on MSNBC. Liberal programming elsewhere, you know, pack a lunch when you go to look for it, because it ain't there. Millions and millions of liberals in America, there's no programming for us. Sorry. Maybe it's a recognition via Nielsen or something that liberals just don't have time for too much with the TV box. You know, when we do, we're watching that pointy-headed, geeky stuff like Nova and American Experience and Frontline and Bill Moyers. And, well, what do the liberals need? They've got PBS. And PBS has, of course, been infiltrated by right-wing ideologues. But anyway, it appears that Comcast claims that it doesn't have anything to do with Right Network. And so maybe I was wrong in mentioning that Comcast was tied into it. The rest of it, however, does not call for a retraction. The fact of the matter is, millions of dollars are going to be pumped into creating yet another megaphone mouthpiece for the right wing, while there's nothing out there to counter it on our part. Nothing. Bupkis. Marty wants to know, Patricia Heaton or Doris Roberts on Everybody Loves Raymond? Patricia Heaton. Bad wing nut. Bad wing nut. Can't watch her. Can't. Can't have anything to do with it. So we shall see. We shall see, indeed. And backing up a little bit, I got a note earlier today from our buddy Dennis down in Kentucky. And it put me in mind of something, because you know we've had this ongoing conversation about Victoria Jackson, and I still halfway think, even though she's a fundie and all that stuff, there's something about what she's doing with the teabaggers that just smells a little too Andy Kaufman for my tastes. Oh, I'm wrong. No, this was not sent to me by Dennis. This was sent to me by Richard. But, listen to this. It comes from the Huffington Post by Ellis Weiner. Wiener, maybe. I don't know. I was taught long ago that in good German, EI is pronounced I and IE is pronounced E. And like all rules, apparently that one was made to be broken. So he is Ellis, Weiner. And my apologies to Ellis for whichever way I'm getting it wrong. But he writes an open letter to Victoria Jackson, and he says, Dear Ms. Jackson, I know you'll forgive me when I say that because of my age, I'll be 112 years young next October. I wasn't watching Saturday Night Live much when you were on it, but I did see you in a few sketches back then, and I thought you were terrific. Cute, sexy, and faux-dumb in the classic Judy Holliday, Goldie Hawn mold. So I wasn't all that surprised when you reemerged recently as a spokesperson, or should I say, misspokesperson for the Tea Party or Tea Bagger or Tea Cozy or whatever they are movement. You would be the one to pull off this absolutely brilliant piece of political theater. You've nailed it perfectly. Your character, whom you cannily call Victoria Jackson, we have to say that Rush Limbaugh style. Victoria Jackson. Because that's how he says it whenever he says Jesse Jackson. He has to, right. So, you know, just working from the just learning at the feet of the master here. Victoria Jackson displays exactly the right combination of confusion, desperation, and outright stupidity. Take your recent interview by that genial idiot Steve Doocy on Fox News. There you were, not only insisting that Barack Obama is a communist, but doing so in the persona of someone who obviously wouldn't know a real communist if he came up and seized her means of production. Doocy, whose job it is to present to advantage cretins and psychos, wasted no time in correcting you like a 10th grade civics teacher. Well, he isn't a communist, and waited in vain, thanks to your sharp sense of timing, for you to say,
"Oh, sorry, Steve, you're right. He's a socialist."
Obama isn't a socialist either, but it's all one to Victoria Jackson. And you played the scene perfectly. Of course, you'd had time to rehearse the character, both at other gatherings of frothing right-wing nut bars and on your must-see YouTube performance where Victoria Jackson plays guitar, expresses herself, and acts for all the world like a person recovering from general anesthesia with minimal brain damage and maximal heart. Like all first-rate performers, actors, musicians, athletes, etc., you do something very difficult and make it look easy. Of course, the qualities we see on display at these teabag rallies are anything but subtle. Still, you have a shrewd sense of how to reveal them in all their multiplicity. They include, as if you didn't know, passion. These people experience strong emotions. They shout, they wave their fists, they yell, and okay, sometimes they spit on people. Because, you know, who doesn't? They have feelings about stuff, and they don't care who knows it. Anger, and not just feelings. These folks are mad at whom? You name it. Obama, Reid, Pelosi, Emmanuel, Michelle, Sean Penn, Lady Gaga, Avatar, Democrats, liberals, the administration, the media, immigrants, hippies, healthcare, the public option, Saul freaking Alinsky, as if any of them have the slightest idea of who he was and whose interests he defended. You ever notice that? All that Glenn Beck talk about Saul Alinsky and rules for radicals and all of that stuff, and never a mention of, you know, because it's just generally, well, you know, he was a communist. You know, with a name like Alinsky, how could he not be? But he never goes into the details of exactly what it was Saul Alinsky was working on, which was, of course, bettering the plight and condition of, you know, poor people, working people in this country. So that necessarily makes him a bomb-throwing Bolshevik, I guess, whatever. Self-righteousness, this is what they're taught by Russian Hannity. If something bad happens to you, or even if you just don't like something, Obama winning the election, Democrats passing laws, etc., then your liberty has been hijacked, your freedom has been stolen, and you have been forced to submit to tyranny. The merits, the facts, the actual history of the past 10, let alone 100 years, that's not their responsibility, which is to scream and then feel ennobled by it. Ask them one question about an issue, and they retreat into, well, I'm not an expert, and anti-intellectualist sneering about elites. There are other qualities, of course, including ignorance. They don't know what communism or socialism are any more than Victoria Jackson does. Gullibility. They actually think that Sarah Palin, a woman who literally cannot answer a question without lying, is a truth-teller. And sheer obliviousness to reality. And all this comes wrapped in the shiny red, white, and blue gift paper of patriotism. This is the best, i.e. the worst part. These people whom you so astutely lampoon use patriotism as pornography. The idea that by attending a rally and waving a sign and screaming things that make absolutely no sense, keep your government hands off my Medicare! Well, I think it's maybe time to cue up your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore, but we played that last night. You can feel like you have something in common with our founding fathers. Well, it gets them hot and bothered and stimulated and aroused, and some of them even dress up in revolutionary attire, which is their equivalent of leather and studs. But look at me telling you this while you obviously have a deeper grasp of it all than I ever could. You, after all, in a masterstroke of character development, have said more than once, Glenn Beck has taught me well, knowing, as anyone with half a brain knows, that claiming Glenn Beck as your teacher is about as wise as claiming Dr. Mengele as your primary care physician. Please. As a favor to a fan, keep that in the act. It's priceless. Then again, in the end, it's not funny. Even when their grievances are legitimate, because who isn't worried about the future? All they're doing to address them is shouting, spitting, and cheering patent demagogues like Palin and Beck, who, it need hardly be added, are sympathizing with them all the way to the bank. It's hard to know what will satisfy these people. Certainly not a Republican victory in November or in 2012. It was Republicans who laid the groundwork for this mess that's causing them to suffer. The Bush tax cuts, the unfunded wars, the deregulation of Wall Street, disasters all, and the GOP would do it all again in an instant if they could. Then they and Fox News and Limbaugh and Hannity would, as befits members of the party of personal responsibility, blame the next collapse on, come on, one, two, three, Obama. Maybe all they need is some job security, health care they can afford, college tuition that doesn't provoke an aneurysm, decent treatment by the banks that hold their mortgages, and some unpanicked expectation of the future. That may be coming, although maybe not too soon enough. So be careful, Ms. Jackson. You know and I know you're just goofing on them, and no one could possibly be as silly, oblivious, and ignorant as the character you're portraying. But those around you aren't in any mood for jokes. Angry mobs never, ever do good things. In fact, they usually end up doing terrible things. So get in, do your shtick, and get out. But keep up the great work. That from Ellis Wienerweiner over at Huffington Post. And really, I mean no disrespect, I just don't know how to pronounce it. And that's not because I'm a dumb hillbilly, it's because it seems like all the rules have been thrown out the window. But I have, Juanita reminding me, Victoria Jackson's not only right-wing, but she's right-wing Christian. Oh, I know, Juanita, but the thing is, nobody can do that. That's too over the, it is way too beyond the pale. I mean, honest to God, go on YouTube, find a clip of Victoria Jackson singing her Communist in the White House ukulele song. And then find an old clip of Andy Kaufman doing wrestling with women. Or what was the name of that character that he did, the really sleazy lounge singer act? Just compare. It's goofing. The joke is, you know, the joke is on the audience. Maybe not. I don't know. And by the way, Marty noting, I would not trust the word of the evil Comcast on this, where Right Network is concerned. Neither do I. But you know what? They will out themselves sooner or later. They just needed to put some sort of a veneer over it while they're finishing this megalopoly takeover of NBC. And personally, I find that thing scary. This is really... Look, it's the same thing with Smithfield Meats, okay? Remember when we dug around a little bit and found out that everything in your grocer's meat case is made, owned, or controlled, or a wholly owned subsidiary of Smithfield Meats? Same. We can pretend that there's MSNBC, and we can pretend that there's CNBC, and we can pretend that there is the A&E and so forth. But they're all just one unit. They're all just one product. They are, oh dear, avatars. They're like the Hindu gods. You know, they are avatars representing one facet or another of a greater overarching thing. And it does not, no benefit inures to the American people out of these things. In fact, as the NBC Universal takeover by Comcast goes forward, it can't be anything but a net loss. We don't need further conglomeration, and I realize the White House is rather busy, but we need to be moving toward active divestiture. And frankly, you know, don't rely on me for any of this. Go talk to some of those free market gurus. No, the real ones. I'm not talking about the anarcho-Randian types. The real ones. Because, you see, there's no free market in ownership this massive and this pervasive. It's a little pet peeve of mine, but I firmly believe that significant elements of the 1996 Telecommunications Act should be rolled back. No single company has any good in mind when it buys up every radio station in a town. That's localized monopolization. And to say that, well, you know, there's two towns over where they don't own a station, that doesn't make it not a monopoly. Those of you of a certain age well remember, I'm sure, growing up when there was a Soviet Union. And we would all chuckle up our sleeves whenever there would be a press release from Pravda or TASS or Izvestia. Because we all understood they were the same thing. It was all one entity. And it sort of makes my eyes cross to go down this road a little, but economically, don't capitalism and communism wind up in the same place if either are unrestrained? Don't they wind up with massive concentrations of wealth in a single hand? The only difference being that the concentration is in a corporate hand in the capitalist system and in a government hand in a communist system. Look at Walmart. There are more towns than we can count in this country where if you can't get it at Walmart, you can't get it. Because the mom and pop stores are gone and the independent retailers are gone. What the hell difference is that? Is there between that and a Soviet-style command economic system? I don't see much. Because for me, you know, whether the state owns it or some corporation owns it, it's still all the money going in one direction. And ultimately, whether a corporation gets it or the state gets it, it still ain't doing me any good, or you, or us. So it's hard not to see something like the Comcast takeover of NBC and not just shudder a little bit, because it isn't good for it simply isn't good for us, and there's no harm to be had in not letting it happen. Because, you see, NBC Universal is already the product of a massive conglomeration. And frankly, no, NBC is not too big to fail. If they fall apart, there is someone out there that will pick up the pieces and go forward. But the pieces will be picked up individually and not bought off in a lot. There's a reason the Sherman Act exists, because we made a national determination that that kind of conglomerated wealth and that kind of conglomerated power is not good for the body politic of the nation. So, you know, just a little something to think about. Meanwhile, back in Washington, D.C., he said, we have the Supreme Court of the United States proving yet again that that first thing I ever heard on the first day of the first semester and the first week of law school is, you know, and it's presented as a truism, and it is because it is, and that is that hard cases make bad law. There is no way that you can look at videos of dogfighting and think, hoo-wee, there's some free speech at work. But that's what the justices ruled, and I don't mean by the usual 5-4 rats versus the normal people the kind of decision today. No, today the rats ruled, in addition to Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Stephen Breyer and Anthony Kennedy and John Paul Stevens, with Chief Justice John Roberts writing for the majority, minus Alito. And that's the weird part. 8-1, and Alito was the lone dissenter in a decision invalidating and striking down, vitiating, what have you, a federal law that was designed to stop a certain form of pornography. Every now and then I read a news story and I think, Bob, you got to get out more. Or maybe I'm just proud of the fact that I don't get out more. I had no idea. I had never, ever, ever heard of porn called crush videos. But apparently, in the 1990s, and maybe before that, and probably purchased in large part mainly by Republicans, there was a niche market in pornography of a sort that featured women stomping little animals while wearing high-heeled shoes. No, not you know, dominatrices stomping, you know, the David Vitters of the world while wearing high-heeled shoes. That'd be porn. But no, stomping animals, you know, I guess like what? Gerbils, frogs, mice, what? And in the report that was generated by the House of Representatives in 1999, these videos were described as a very specific sexual fetish. Ew. And the report said, quote, in some video depictions, the woman's voice can be heard talking to the animals in a kind of dominatrix patter. You know, I'm a pretty creative guy, but I can't even ad lib what that would be. Oh, you are a bad gerbil. You're a very bad gerbil. Mommy, squish! Oh, I did it after all. So, a law was drafted to make those kinds of videos illegal and declare that as speech they had no intrinsic political or artistic value, yada, yada, yada. Enter, dear God, enter Robert J. Stevens. Robert J. Stevens holds himself out to the public as an author. Robert J. Stevens holds himself out to the public as a small-time film producer. Moreover, Robert J. Stevens holds himself out to the public as an expert on pit bulls. You know, dogs, pit bulls, fighting dogs. The record is clear that Robert J. Stevens had never participated in any dog fighting activities. But as the New York Times story says, he did compile and sell videotapes showing the fights. And in 1999, under this federal law that was under examination in this particular case, he compiled and sold videotapes showing the fights, and he got a 37-month sentence under the law. Dogfighting. Dogfighting is illegal in all 50 states. The law in question, and I'm sorry this needs such setup, but it's kind of, you really just can't say, decision bad, and move on. The law had language in it that applied to recordings of, quote, conduct in which a living animal is intentionally maimed, mutilated, tortured, wounded, or killed. And the law did not contain language as to whether or not it was whether or not the conduct was legal or illegal. Um, like I said, hard cases make bad law, and this is one of them. Well, by an 8-1 vote, with Chief Justice John Roberts writing the opinion, and, you know, including all those liberal judicial activists, they overturned the law. It is okay. It is a protected form of speech under the First Amendment. It is okay to stand there while a pair of vicious dogs are maiming each other and videotape it, as long as, I guess, one of the dogs doesn't belong to you or you haven't placed a bet. Then, having videoed it, you can make oodles of copies of it, put it in little jewel cases, title it Dog Fighting Gone Wild, and put it into the stream of commerce for sale to the incredibly sick human beings who get off on this stuff. And according to John G. Roberts and seven other members of the United States Supreme Court, that's A-OK, because that is protected free speech. I submit to you that the Supreme Court of the United States has a rather skewed definition of what protected speech is. The reference, for instance, our good friend Mike Malloy. I've taken to watching his Malloy Vision casts, and I think he and Kathy are doing a magnificent job. But because Mike Malloy's words go out over terrestrial radio, you know, the so-called public airwaves that are largely dominated by the right wing, but Mike has figured out a way to get a number of stations that carry him. Well, whenever Mike wants to say, and notice I'm on the internet so I can say this, whenever Mike wants to say bullshit, Mike has to hold up an index card that says bullshit to the camera on Malloy Vision. Because that speech, no matter what level of creative and political and otherwise genius is involved in the expression of the thought, that word cannot go out over the public airwaves for fear that it might do damage to little Timmy or little Susie or little Cindy somewhere across the fruited plain, while at the same time Rush Limbaugh routinely and freely makes jokes about transvestites referring to a female transsexual as having had performed upon her an operation that he has on more than one occasion referred to as an adidectomy. Hard cases make bad law. But wrap your mind around that. A person who actively promotes an otherwise illegal act has more First Amendment protection than Mike Malloy or Tom Hartman or anyone else broadcasting on the terrestrial so-called public airwaves. Imagine that. Interestingly, when this law was passed, the Clinton administration directed the Department of Justice not to use this law for anything but the suppression of the Crush videos. The Department of Justice, however, under George W. Bush, decided to use it for other things. And so did the Clinton administration. And they read this as giving them the leeway to go out and take disgusting garbage like dogfighting videos out of the stream of commerce. But here's the fun part. This is the part you're just going to love. The rationale for striking down the law. This is from the New York Times story. Chief Justice Roberts said the law applied even more broadly. Since all hunting is illegal in the District of Columbia, for instance, he said the law makes the sale of magazines or videos showing hunting a crime here. Quote, the demand for hunting depictions exceeds the estimated demand for crush videos or animal fighting depictions by several orders of magnitude, he wrote. Now, bear in mind that the law has an exception in it for any material that has, quote, serious religious, political, scientific, educational, journalistic, historic, or artistic values. But Roberts says those exceptions were insufficient to save the statute. Most hunting videos, for example, are not obviously instructional in nature. Now, this is the guy who a couple of days ago heard arguments, oral arguments, about the SWAT team member from the city of Ontario, California, who in a discussion of the technology behind texting and pagers and stuff, looked and from the bench and said, "You mean you push the button and it doesn't just go there?" And Justice Scalia said, I didn't know that you didn't just push the button and it didn't just go there. And this is another example of that. Most hunting videos, for example, are not obviously instructional in nature, except in the sense that all life is a lesson. Bull! I have seen more stalking the whitetail in the hills of Appalachia videos than you can shake a stick at. Alabama whitetail jamboree. You know, come on. And they are, really, they don't do anything for me. But they are educational. They are designed to teach you how to bag that big buck. And they feature, you know, how to put up your tree stand, how to use the climbing, the tree climbing tree stand. How to be real still, how to throw corn out in the field, how to call Bambi in with your snort grunting call or whatever. And it really is. I mean, and I don't want to denigrate hunting. It is educational. John Roberts is so divorced from reality. Which reminds me, there's a divorce story out there. John Roberts is so divorced from reality that he thinks that, I don't know, that the Bubbas out in middle America are just sitting around watching deer hunting videos and, well, you know, whatever it is that John Roberts does whenever he watches, you know, his little private collection of Nazi memorabilia. This law did not need to be stricken down. Yeah, and Sue noting, how many times have we seen Ted Nugent in a hunting video screaming, "You can't grill it till you kill it"? There's tons of this stuff out there. And yes, it's educational. You know, there are educational materials for how to teach your son to hunt. So you're going to take Junior on his first prowl, on his first stalk for a big old Boone and Crockett atypical. And it teaches gun safety. And this is not the gun discussion, okay? This is not the gun discussion. But it's highly educational. But not according to Chief Justice Roberts, who apparently thinks, you know, porn is porn is porn is porn. A hunting video would no more have been prosecuted under this statute than Anthony Bourdain would have. Because the exception was there for materials with serious religious, political, scientific, educational, journalistic, historic, or artistic value. And most, ask a hunter. Most of these things are designed to be educational. It's not just fun. Get up any morning, and catch ESPN during a non-major sport portion of the year, if there is one. Big bass fishing with Sonny Bob Jimbo. And what you want to use here is you want to use your 20-pound test line, because you don't want that little bastard getting away. And I prefer a spinner with a modified wiggler. Now you just watch here. Look over there. You see where that log is? I'm gonna cast over there by that log. Now you cast over by a log like that on the morning like this, you're gonna get you big bass. It's educational. It really is. I can't stand to watch it for more than two and a half minutes because I have no particular interest in being educated along those lines. But, you know, God, one man's nightshirt's another man's pajamas. How can 8 members of the Supreme Court of the United States be so divorced from reality as to give greater First Amendment protection to a dogfighting video than they would to, because you see, there wouldn't, let's say Malloy let one fly by accident and it slipped past Kathy and the dump button. And the FCC came along and said, that'll be $275,000, please. And they appealed it. Roberts and Scalia and the rats and the rest of the, we got to protect the decency of the, it's a reasonable time, place, and manner. Dogfighting videos, on the other hand, they're okay. By the way, the Humane Society of the United States says they will press Congress for a more limited version of the bill that will still stop the video, the dogfighting videos. I have to say good on them. Maybe they can get Congressman Ray Hall to introduce it, seeing as how he's their animal lover legislator of the year for the Humane Society of the U.S. But we all remember how that went. Let's, you know the phone number, by the way, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel. It is 304-658-3333. Email rolls into Bob Kincaid, BOBKINCAID, @gmail.com, and we go to the phones. And we don't go. No, we don't go to the phones. Someday I'll have a producer and we'll know when people hang up before I can get to them. Email rolling in from Ron and Raleigh, going back to the whole business about Comcast. Bob, don't you remember that right-wing spiel about economies of scale? I guess we're going to see how that crap really works. Don't you remember the original Rollerball where there are only one of each of the companies? And yeah, I do. I do, Ron. And we're fast approaching that. We're approaching that place. The really big gasoline company of America, the really big retail company of America, the really big meat company of America. Yeah. Ron adding, on the other hand, giving porn a bad name, where's Ed Meese when we need him? That man knew porn when he saw it. This stuff's just plain creepy. Sexual arousal comes in all sizes, but just because you get your jollies doesn't make it pornography. Joe asking, along the way, are you planning on doing a video stream like Malloy? Yeah, we are. But there are things that have to happen before that can ever happen. There's equipment things, and there's, frankly, construction things, and, you know, lighting things. That all has to happen before we can do that. Because it's going to be terrifying enough for me to get in front of a camera as it is. You know, I can just, makeup! No amount of it can save me. So let's try the phones again. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Yes.
Hi there. My name's Cindy, and I live over in Hawaii.
Oh, hi, Cindy.
And how's it going?
Pretty good.
Good.
Aloha.
And Aloha. Yeah, actually, my husband, Kenny, calls in and talks to you once in a while.
Oh, that's your husband. Okay, great.
Yeah. Yeah, we just wanted to call and say hey today and let you know to bring up, like, the GMO situation in Monsanto a little bit, try to keep it out there in front of people. We just learned of a documentary video that was on called Islands at Risk, and it was on the Free Press .org site, and it's telling how detrimental and how heavily the all these GMO companies have infiltrated over in the Hawaiian Islands. I guess they think that, you know, we are in the middle of nowhere, less risk for our pollen to spread, and we are a great test site.
So they're actually... You know, well, I mean, I know what a fragile ecosystem an island chain like Hawaii is. So you mean the GMO stuff is actually posing a threat out there?
Well, yes, and there's so many people that are, you know, against it here because once it's into a certain crop, it can keep, you know, it can be detrimental to all the other types of those same kind of crops. You know,
oh, without a doubt.
Right, and I think I said the wrong thing earlier. It's freespeech.org. I'm not sure if what I said earlier. I think I might have said the wrong thing. But, yeah, and we've had a battle over them wanting to do GMO taro over here, and the papayas are already facing a lot of problems, especially here on the big island they've been.
You know, I had no idea, Cindy. I think of GMOs in terms of corn and Franken spuds and stuff like that because – you know, the cradle of maize cultivation in the world is down in southern Mexico, and GMO you know, things like Roundup Ready corn are a real threat to it, and because of the patent issues that surround it, present genuine threats of complete eradication to the small farmers who still farm, you know, old heirloom varieties of maize in places like southern Mexico. I had no idea it had expanded into things like papayas.
Yes. So it's here. And then not only that, you know, things like corn. They had a nice Hawaii sweet corn. The universities here had been developing. And, you know, all of those things are affected. And just experiments with all of the things that you, like you said, that you normally think of being done here. And they were showing on that video different places throughout the Hawaiian Islands where these companies have set up big, you know, acreage of test crops, even have warning signs, you know, do not eat, not for consumption for people or animals. Yet it's out there, and, you know, it's not much we can do to stop them except for get the word out and have more and more people aware. And,
That is so much of what surrounds issues relating to food. In fact, one of the big documentaries in the last year was Food, Inc. I don't know if you saw that.
I have not seen that whole thing yet.
It bears watching because, you know, this is how you start famine. Mm-hmm. This is how you start plague. It really, really is. And the lengths to which some of these scientists gone to the dark side, if you will go. I mentioned Franken spuds a little bit ago. I first found out about it reading it was Michael Pollan's first book. He is so important. Michael Pollan is in what he writes about food. But he introduced me to the concept of the Franken spud via. The Botany of Desire was the name of the book.
Oh, yes, I've heard of that book.
Can you imagine, Cindy, being a scientist and working every day in your lab to select a little bit of DNA from a goat stomach and thinking, you know, I'm going to put this in a potato?
It's crazy.
In what universe is that a good idea?
Exactly. I know there's no regulation against it, and, you know, yet supposedly the pharmaceutical companies even have regulation before they can put something out to the public, but this was passed, and I think when Dan Quayle was in there, and, you know, no problem, you let them go, and, yeah, no thought to how it's going to affect the future crops or other crops, cross-pollinating, and It's just, it's very, very...
I always think about the rules that, and I am honestly not sure if we succeeded or not. I'm sure I'll get informed here presently. But I'm reminded, Cindy, of what we tried to do to the Iraqis. Now there you are in the land between the river, Mesopotamia,
yep.
And
civilization.
The cradle of civilization, the cradle of agriculture, the place where they first began to cultivate wheat, rye, oats, barley, that kind of stuff. And as a function of you know, we blew up Iraq and now we're going to rebuild Iraq in our own image, we actually dictated that Iraqi farmers would plant GMO, Monsantoized, Archer Daniels, Midland, whatever, genetically modified wheat and other grain seed stocks.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the real, for any sort of subsistence farmer, the real joker in that deck is the fact that you can't save seed.
Right, exactly. They're all terminator seeds, and so you're forced. You're in a constant state of almost slavery to the bigger party that can provide you with the seed.
And I love that concept of the terminator seed because it's sort of the exact opposite of the movie. Because it's, you know, with a terminator seed, it's I won't be back.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it ain't gonna grow.
No, no, and. You know, the other frustrating things are some of the, we watched just lots and lots of documentaries about everything, and some of the things we saw, I think it had happened up in, like, South Dakota or the areas over there, and it's just unbelievable that farmers who have, I think it was like on wheat and barley for generations have farmed that same land. They have diligently, you know, bred their stock and kept their seeds, and they were tainted by the pollen in the air from the GMO crops and companies like Monsanto that had, you know, it blew in the air, tainted their crops, got into it, and then when these companies trespass on their property, test the small farmers' crops, and they find, oh, you are, you know, you've got our genetics in your crop now, and you are stealing that from us because we have it patented. And then the farmers lose in court, and they're sued, and they can lose everything for doing nothing, you know, for growing the same things they've been trying to grow forever. And it's really absurd that you, when you think, hey, it's the big companies that are polluting their land through the air, yet...
Yeah, in the most ancient forms of Anglo-American jurisprudence, that's a classic case of trespass.
Yeah.
It's the, you know, it's the GMO seed that's trespassing on the small farmer's land, not vice versa. But again, because of the corporatization of the courts, you know, made manifest in people like Roberts and Alito and Thomas and Scalia... It is seen in that sort of upside down, backwards and sideways world as the corporation, the GMO seed producer, is the one that is aggrieved.
Yes.
The trespasser is the victim.
It's bizarre. It makes no sense. And, you know, you tell that to just somebody randomly that may or may not be follow. You know, much, especially for people that don't follow any of this stuff going on, and they're going, you know, doing their, living their lives, and they just, they can't believe it. It seems like a ridiculous concept until you find out it really is true. It's happening.
And you have to pay attention. Like I said, last night on the show, I was talking about the conversation that, that was initiated between me and a young underground coal miner. It all started because I was enwrapped in the yogurt aisle of the grocery store trying to find yogurt that didn't have high fructose corn syrup in it.
Yes.
And I'm absolutely paranoid about that.
I agree. We look at everything, too, and do our best to, you know, avoid it. And I've had the same similar experience in the store where, you know, someone saw me looking at, I don't even know what it was, a can of some beverage, and I was like, yeah, I'm trying to get something with no high fructose corn syrup, and, you know, they were like, oh, you know, well, it's not that bad for you, and I was like...
It's not what my pancreas tells me. Cindy, I'm scared to death that I'm going to be standing in the pasta sauce aisle one of these days, and of course the purists will say, what, you use sauce out of a jar? You know, come on, there's 9 people in this house. Yes, we use sauce out of a jar, but I'm scared to death that one of these days my lizard brain is going to take over, and I'm going to take a jar of sauce off the shelf, and I'm going to look at it, and I'm going to, tomatoes, water, onions, salt, polysorbate 80, the high fructose corn syrup, and I'm just going to go, God damn it, and I'm going to throw it on the ground.
Yeah.
And clean up in aisle four, arrest in aisle four, because it's so frustrating.
It is frustrating. It's a shame that we have to be subject to that, and you can't just go and buy something and feel safe and that it's good for you. And they recently had, I think, something on the news where there was a shipment, I think it was of meats, beef, I think it was, from the U.S. being shipped to Mexico that was refused by, you know, the Mexican Food Administration as having too many chemicals and things in the meat to be considered, you know, a safe product for the shelves. Yeah, and so it's really sad that's what's going
on. Well, did you see this story a couple of days, Cindy, a couple of days ago? This story about more tainted food winds up in urban food sellers' shops than out in the burbs or out in rural areas?
I don't know that I thought
it,
that.
I ran across that one, and it just blew me away. They did a legitimate, honest-to-goodness study of food contaminants and tainted food, and a high majority of it wound, you know, because one of the fundamental breakdowns in our society that, you know, we really don't pay so much attention to is in our cities. I mean, on the times when, you know, country mouse me leaves the hills and hollers here. I mean, I'm only 6 miles from a grocery store, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's up one road, and it's easy to get to, relatively speaking. But when I go to a city, one of the things I look around for is, you know, where's the grocery store?
Yeah.
And you know what? There aren't any.
Right.
Especially if you're in what is determined to be a bad neighborhood.
Yes.
And so it turns out, according to this study, that the tainted food is what winds up in what few grocery stores there are there.
That's ridiculous.
And you know, when it happens on a statistical level like that, statistically significant sample, then you have to look up and you say, well, you know, this isn't accidental.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the highest concentrations of population, all getting tainted, and not having much of a choice to pick from.
Yeah, because the little bodegas and mom-and-pop corner stores, you know, very little shelf space, they're going to sell high-calorie, low-food value, the high retail markup stuff in order simply to survive. You know, you're just not going to have refrigerator cases, fresh produce cases with, you know, nice fresh arugula and kohlrabi.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you brought the topic up, Cindy, because it should be higher on our list of priorities, and it should be more brightly blinking on our collective radar than it is. Michael Pollan, that I referenced a little bit ago, he said, either Mr. Obama or some president in the very near future is going to find that one of his top national security agenda items is food production.
Right.
And he's going to be surprised, and he's going to look up and go, how did it get this way?
Yeah. Over a long time of turning, looking the other way and allowing the corporations, it's all about the profit and not about anything healthy for people. And, you know, where I think the U.S. is one of the only places where the GMO labeling isn't even required. And you can't even make an informed decision in many cases because you just don't know where that came from or where maybe there's no high fructose corn syrup in there, but you don't know, you know, where the tomatoes were grown or what kind of wheat pasta you're getting, if it's GMO or not.
And, you know, I talk a lot with John Fox, our chief engineer, who's down in Australia, and he tells me that the beef that's grown down there and the milk and the milk products that are down there, they're not allowed to contain most of the nasty stuff that goes into milk and beef production in the United States.
Mm-hmm. It is a difference. I mean, even just here, we've got a lot of the wild pigs, and we have a few friends that hunt, and I'm actually today making a pot of stew with, get wild pig. They feed off the natural after rain, and it's a very different texture to the meat. It's just much better, and, you know, it's less fat, and, you know, I'm not eating something that's been injected or fed things that it's not.
Oh, and that and when you do a roast with it like that, you know, when you do a pig, the crispy part is just yummy.
Oh, yes. Yeah, but anyway, just wanted to call and kind of put that out there again. We like to try to keep it in front of people. And
well, I'm glad you did, Cindy, and don't be a stranger. Call anytime, okay?
Okay, will do. Thank you very much, Bob.
All right. Take care now.
All right.
Bye. Aloha. Cindy calling from Hawaii. And by the way, I've had a couple of inquiries. News Ninja Gene and Nancy also shot me a note on earlier saying, because I was talking about the yogurt and looking at, and have you tried Greek yogurt? And yes, I have. I don't mind it at all. My kids despise it. And that's probably because they're used to the high fructose corn syrup when you get right down to it. But it's like Michael Pollan said in his Omnivore's Dilemma, in the segment he did on industrial food. They did a meal at McDonald's, and he handed his then 7-year-old daughter her McNuggets and said, well, and after she was eating it, he said, what does it taste like, honey? And she said, it tastes like McNugget. I have a friend who refuses to refer to grape Kool-Aid as grape. What flavor is that? It's purple flavor, because there's no relationship between grape and the flavoring of the beverage, save for the fact that the Kool-Aid manufacturer calls it grape. And yes, Lee, in the chat room, I am talking pig cracklins. And they is good. And I got a pig story here. But you know what? We're not going to do the pig story just quite yet. No. No, sir. We are going to do, instead, we are going to go to our top of the hour break and try to keep some semblance of order to this little zoo that passes for a radio program that gives me my reason for existence. And in so doing, I will invite you to join in on the second hour of the program, 877-443-2366. You heard how easy it was. Cindy and I had never talked before, and lo and behold, she survived the process and even ended on aloha. So you can do it, too. First-time callers are always welcome on the horn. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Coming up, the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen, a particular treat on Tuesdays and Thursdays on the horn. I can't wait until they get funding enough to go 5 days a week, doggone it. I just love the Green News Report. This is America's listener-supported, emphasis on listener-supported, liberal voice. This is The Horn, and we'll be right back. No. There we go. Stupid Windows Media Player.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org. or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, 4/20/2010.
Rescue and recovery in China. Spotlight on the coal industry continues following this month's disaster.
Failure first and foremost of management, but also a failure of oversight and a failure of laws. So riddled with loopholes that they allow unsafe conditions to continue.
Plus, eruption, disruption.
Air travel becomes a pain. In the ash. All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
A couple days after the health care bill had been signed into law, Obama ran around all over the country and said, hey, you know, I'm looking around, the earth hadn't opened up. No Armageddon out there. God may have replied. This volcano in Iceland, Earth has opened up. I don't know whether it's a rebirth or Armageddon. Hopefully it's a rebirth. God speaking.
Yes, that's it. God caused a volcano in response to healthcare legislation. Thanks for straightening that out, Rush. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, God is clearly speaking to the peoples of Europe with this volcano. What do you have for us this week?
One of my favorite jokes to come out of this is that it was the last wish of Iceland's economy that its ashes be spread all over Europe.
No doubt. That explains it.
Yes. Well, on a more serious note, in the aftermath of last week's earthquake in western China, the death toll continues to rise with more than 2,000 confirmed dead, 12,000 injured, and thousands more left homeless. As in the Haiti earthquake, poor construction is blamed for the high death toll. But some good news. Four people were rescued alive from the rubble nearly a week after the quake. Rescue efforts have been hindered by the remote mountain location and sub-zero temperatures. President Obama and Vice President Joe Biden will travel to West Virginia on Sunday, and the president will speak at a memorial service for 29 miners killed in the Upper Big Branch mine explosion 2 weeks ago. In a speech last week, Obama announced a new push for mining safety.
Stronger mine safety laws were passed in 2006 after the Sago mine disaster. But safety violators like Massey have still been able to find ways to put their bottom line before the safety of their workers.
In his remarks, President Obama also ordered federal mine inspectors to be deployed immediately to all mines with poor safety records like the Upper Big Branch mine. The president also called for changes to eliminate the backlog of mine safety violations now stalled in appeals, which critics say the industry uses to avoid accountability. He also called for new rules to give federal regulators greater authority to shut down unsafe mines.
Well, I'll tell you, Obama has certainly changed his tune here. A few weeks ago, just after the mine disaster, Obama seemed to be siding with Massey Energy and the miners' employers when he said this at a White House speech.
It's a profession that's not without risks and danger, and the workers and their families know that. But their government and their employers know that they owe it to these families to do everything possible to ensure their safety when they go to work each day.
Yes, perhaps the government, but not the employer here, was interested in miner safety, so I'm glad to hear that Obama is now changing his tune.
Well, one thing the president did not address was the revolving door between the mining industry and the federal government, ties that critics say put miners at risk. A new analysis from the Washington Post shows that over the last 10 years, over 200 congressional staff members, regulators, and even lawmakers went to work for the mining industry as industry lobbyists and consultants.
Wow, that's 200. Little wonder these regulations aren't actually enforced, isn't it?
And the eruption disruption continues.
Yeah, this Iceland volcano. What's the name of that volcano, Des?
I'm not going to try.
Name? You're not going to try? Well, you wouldn't be alone.
E.F. Yar Cool.
Ayaflaya Yerkaval. It's Aya Fiatla Yerkel.
Huge clouds of ash shot into the air by Iceland's, I hope I'm saying this right, volcano.
The pronunciation is Aya Fiatla Yerkel.
Yeah, what she said. Iceland's volcano is still erupting and still disrupting air travel over Europe and now around the world. Nearly 7 million travelers have been stranded, including an estimated 40,000 Americans. The situation remains extremely dynamic. As of this morning, the eruption intensified, but about half of Europe's airports began to reopen and some scheduled high-altitude flights were allowed to resume. The full global economic impact is as yet unknown. Airline industry losses are already estimated at $1 billion. The airline industry is pressing aviation officials to ease up on the restrictions, and some are even accusing the officials of overreacting. The last time this particular volcano was active, the eruption lasted for 2 years. Now, volcanic eruptions can have a climate impact, but climate scientists say the Iceland volcano is too small to have a long-term effect on the global climate.
Okay, what's the name of that volcano again?
I'm not going to even try.
Okay, I'll try. Fiatla, you'll cut lol. You there? Don't laugh. For more on that and the news we didn't get to today, please check our website, greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Sing it.
Fiatla, you're good. It's a long, long name for such a small glacier with such notorious fame. And Eyjafjallajökull has caused quite a stir. And no one can fly anywhere except the birds. Please stop at Eyjafjallajökull. That's it.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
This is a public service announcement.
There's a new type of music program coming to the horn.
Got a letter from the government the other day. Opened it and read it. It said they were suckers.
They wanted me to buy the summer or whatever. Picture me buying the scam. I said never. But I won't heed the battle cry.
Music for liberals. Music for activists. Music with a social conscience. The People's Mixtape.
Johnny's dead and Mitch's gone and Kelly half the lose out on the list and then goes out and I go dirt.
Coming soon to the Head On Radio Network.
Help my heart out.
But your flag gal won't get you into heaven anymore.
Wake up! Wake up! It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Past the hour of 7 o'clock here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. This is the Tuesday edition of The Horn. I'm glad to have you along. I'm Bob. And I'm sure glad Brad and Desi took a run at the name of that volcano, because I'll tell you the honest truth. I've been hiding from the volcano story. I have been. Ever since Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com, your RDA of irony, did a post on it that included the Wikipedia sound file of how to pronounce that thing, that volcano, I heard it and just, you know, because I'm game. I'll take a run at Ahmadinejad or Ahmadinejad or any number of. But that thing and Icelandic and English are related? That's how we got Beowulf? Holy Heorot, Batman! I don't want anything to do with that word. I think I'd gag myself on my own tongue. Or at least it sounds like it. But, you know, good on Brad and Desi for taking a run at it. And whoever that was singing a song about it, that, well, you know, there I was across the channels the other night trying to catch the rerun of Tony Bourdain, which last night didn't rerun like it ordinarily does. Instead, I got Andrew Zimmern in Iceland. Imagine the coincidence. And he was puffin hunting. Hey. Really? That language has something in common with English? But then again, anybody who has ever, you know, when not apparently with the jew result of the truth of march at Paris to the root and bob at every vein and switch the core, which virtue engendered is the floor, you know, Chaucer. Build the time. Well, you know who commented on that? None other than the inimitable Mark Twain in the genius piece, An Account of Captain Stormfield's Visit to Heaven. Talked about the fact that there just aren't, up there in the heaven that Twain imagined, there just weren't that many people to talk to. Even the English speakers, he said, once you get much past the 18th century, you couldn't understand them because there they were talking that Chaucer English and can't get through. Couldn't reach. I think that's what the way Twain put it. Couldn't reach. Email coming in from Ron Raleigh. He says, remember Dan Quayle brought us the Council on Competitiveness under Bush the Elder? That's one of the jumping off points for the patenting of life forms and all the rest of this stuff. India, after years of suffering and an escalating number of farmer suicides, ran Monsanto out of the country and went back to farming as their fathers did. I think it'd be a good, well, it won't happen. Corporations own us. But the Reagan administration, how many horrible things that go on in this country today can be traced to the Reagan administration? It's astonishing to contemplate. Because when you think of it, well, you know, Ronald, the president is a vegetable. Reagan was the one who famously said that ketchup is a vegetable. And you know what? In our urban, urban areas, it is. And our blogger, Texas Betsy, kindly provided me with the link to the story I was referring to in talking with Cindy. It comes from The Consumerist, C-O-N-S-U-M-E-R-I-S-T, theconsumerist.com. Tainted fruits and veggies end up in the hood rather than burbs. And it comes from a study performed by Drexel University, published in the American Journal of Preventive Eyeballs, meat, tongue. The American Journal of Preventive Medicine. Here's the poll quote. Researchers studying fresh produce sold in 6 Philadelphia area neighborhoods found that ready-to-eat salads and strawberries sold in poorer neighborhoods had significantly higher counts of microorganisms, yeasts, and molds than the same products purchased elsewhere, while cucumbers had a higher yeast count and mold, and watermelon contained more bacteria. Consumer options among the city's poorest neighborhoods also offered less variety in produce. Yeah, sorry, no arugula. No baby field greens and infantile butter lettuce. Sorry, no. But, you know, that's one of the reasons when I do have to stop at a fast food joint, you know, even if it's a Subway. We've got one of those here in town. I hate Subway. I just do. Their bread is just... Ugh. Yeah, I know. I'll get email about Subway. But I won't let them put the lettuce on it because that doesn't taste right. It comes in that bag that's been sprayed with argon gas or God only knows what, and it doesn't taste like lettuce anymore. I remember when you used to get lettuce on a hamburger, and it was cool, and it was crisp, and it was wet and crunchy, and and had that sort of neutral yet green flavor to not no not on the let it no not now that they figured out how to send it in something besides the head shape that it grows in. But you know, it's America's urban population, so what? Oh, and by the way, this from Marion Wright Edelman, the president of the Children's Defense Fund. This goes back to January. Noting urban food deserts threaten children's health. Because really, the human brain requires certain nutrients in order to properly wire itself that is not available. It is simply not available in the so-called inner city. Twinkies, yeah, in abundance. Quality nutrition, not so much. So, yeah. And by the way, nah, we'll save that for later. I hate keeping people on hold. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
I got a couple of things I'd like to talk about.
Okie doke.
Talking about the Supreme Court. I was interested to see, heard someone on TV talk about when in our country, the corporations became persons.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking it up, and it was 1898.
Yeah, Santa Clara County versus Union Pacific Railroad.
Right. And did you know, I had a, I don't know if they declared black people as persons yet or not. I know that was after the Civil War, but I had this older medical book
mm-hmm.
for women. I've had it for a long time. Anyway, the guy wrote in there, he said, you can believe this or not, but at the beginning of the century, women were not considered to be persons.
Oh, no. No, no.
So the corporations were persons before we were.
Without a doubt. You're absolutely right.
And I don't know when they declared black people to be persons. I don't know if it was right after. Was it the Emancipation Proclamation? Or?
Well, now the Emancipation Proclamation, truth be told, only freed the slaves in states that were in a state of rebellion. So, for instance, the Emancipation Proclamation ostensibly freed slaves in Alabama and Tennessee, but not Kentucky, because Kentucky was neutral.
Oh boy.
The same with Maryland. So, yeah, it's the passage of the 13th Amendment that forbids slavery.
But when did they declare them persons? I've heard people say that it said they were considered two-fifths of a person or two-thirds?
Three-fifths. That was the compromise reached. Was it the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution? Now I sound like a teabagger.
I wonder how they get...
But implicit in the passage of the ratification of the 13th Amendment is personhood.
But I remember there was when I was real young, like a lot of the older people, you know, that I'm around here in different states, they didn't even believe. They said that they weren't even people, and that they had no soul. Talking about black people.
Well, that was the position of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints up until the 60s or maybe mid-70s.
Yeah, and it was also other churches, too. But anyway, they somebody asked somebody, you know, he was going on about they didn't have no soul. And they said, well, what if they're half white? And he said, well, they have half a soul. I mean, that's just how ignorant things are.
Well, hateful. I prefer hateful over ignorant.
Oh, yeah. That's a better word. But, I mean, it's amazing what people believe. And then, these things that these people are just weird, you know, like John Vogt. Did you hear his little speech that he gave on who's the preacher that his son hung a dog?
Mike Huckabee? Yeah, Mike Huckabee.
Yeah. You know, Did you see that?
No. I mean, I know about the dog hanging and stuff, but I didn't.
Well, but I mean, he was on his show, and Mike Huckabee introduced that you've been blessed with a gift and something, and I want you to have what you have to say. And he, John Vogt said, I don't know if I can even really describe it. He had this thing about that Obama was brainwashing people who, you know, poor people, basically,
mm-hmm.
into thinking that the government owed them something, and that the people who had made all this money were, you know, supposed to share with them. Yeah, it's just so screwy, Bob. Evil too.
Yeah. And you know what? And
what he had to say.
But it plays real big with the stupid crowd, Juanita.
These are things that are popping out all over, new things that you've never heard before. I haven't, you know, heard that. I can't describe what Rush Limbaugh said about giving, you know, feeding the poor. I can't even describe that. He has just got that really.
Or the lieutenant governor of South Carolina who said you don't feed stray dogs.
You know, that's right. Was that the guy that had his affair in Argentina?
No, that was the lieutenant governor. That's the guy that they didn't want Mark Sanford to quit because they were pretty sure that the lieutenant governor was, you know, not batting for our team, if you know what I mean. You know.
Yeah. And another thing I was wanting to talk about was the teabaggers. You know, they've been given all this stuff, like they're like this big majority of people. Of course, we know different, but, you know, the Republicans are basing a lot of their stuff, like, on these people, so-called, like, that's what most Americans want. But I was thinking about, you know, our side's never had a chance. I know I've talked about this before, but every time we would try to protest, our side would try to protest, they'd call out the dogs and the what do you call those, black shirts? With the black hoods, black helmets over their face, with their rubber bullets and all.
You mean the SWAT teams?
Yeah. And then they're saying, you know, that Obama's taking away their freedom. Well, we weren't allowed to protest or anything like that. When they're allowed to, and Obama's not taking away their freedom of speech. If it was us in their shoes, we'd have already been put away somewhere. They would not have been allowed to get up close to the Capitol.
No, I do. Remember the 8 tormented, tortured, miserable years of the Bush administration, George W. Bush administration?
I forget, Bob.
Right, I know. And how we had free speech zones that were, you know, somewhere on the dark side of the moon.
Yeah.
If you didn't have something adoring to say about dim leader. Excuse me, but ever since January 2009, I haven't heard so much about the free speech zones. And God knows the teabaggers are out there just teabagging their fool heads off.
They won't.
Yeah.
And then the gun toters.
They brought guns to town hall meetings. They did.
I don't know.
Yeah, and it's almost like they're trying to goad the government into responding to them. And in fact, Mike Vander Booger Eater, yesterday on the video that I played, said, you know, I think we're going to press them until they just come for us in a fit of pique.
Yeah. Oh, I think they are definitely goading us on. And they always want to get rid of us.
Well, we're the problem.
I got news for them. They're the problem. What's funny, you know, like John Vogt was talking about, we were an embarrassment overseas. Now that Obama's in, well, now they've got a poll saying that the people overseas are...
Yeah, we are thought...
You know, appreciated of, yeah.
Yeah, it's a BBC poll. We're thought, for the first time since 2005, we're actually thought well of.
Yeah. But, you know, we're kind of, in a lot of ways, we're kind of like the coal miners, you know, that have been oppressed to believe that, well, you have to expect these accidents to happen. And, you know, that are not, don't have unions. But you know, these people that don't believe in unions, and I've known plenty of them, what they don't realize what the unions have done for this country.
No, not in the least.
And if they want to get rid of all that and go back the way it used to be, even just when I was a little girl, when my folks were working, and even when I got grown, I had to work 6 days a week. There wasn't no 40-hour weeks, and you got paid once a month. You didn't get paid no overtime. And I was so glad when we get 2 days off a week. I was so glad.
Oh, and you know, when I was in Pittsburgh, I heard that there was a labor historian there. I can't remember his name, but he did an interview with Rick Smith. And, you know, I was just sitting there engineering and producing and stuff. And I heard him... part of what he was talking about, and he was talking about the 84-hour work week.
Yeah.
That was 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. And that was the only way you could keep your job.
Yeah, yeah.
Was by working yourself to death.
My mother, when her daddy was dying, my mother was a farm girl, you know, and all my folks were raised on farms. I wasn't, but they were. And, She loved to do that kind of work, and anyway, her daddy was dying, and he wanted her, she went up to see him up in Georgia, and he wanted some salmon patties.
Oh, salmon cakes, yeah.
Yeah, and back then, like a salmon patty was like $1 a can. And my mother worked 12 hours at least. She worked from sun up to sundown to earn enough to buy him a can. That's how loving my mother was, to buy him a can of that so he could have some
salmon cakes. Yeah.
And that was $1 a day. And down here, they only made, they'd make maybe $10 a week. And finally, in the summer, hardly could find anything. And finally, in the summer, they did get a little unemployment compensation. And they get about $5 a week, and the people say, oh, they're driving up in their Cadillacs to get all that money. Oh, God.
Well, I mean, an 84-hour work week. Imagine that's 12 hours a day, seven days a week.
Yeah.
And that was the industrial standard in the United States up until,
and
the late 19th century.
Agriculture, which... My folks were considered working in agriculture because it was a fruit business, you know. They worked in various things that, like, they picked fruit when the first came down, and then they got uptown and got to season us and peel fruit and stuff like that and grade. That was a little bit upper. You could make a little bit more on that. And, wow. But, of course, things were cheaper then. You knew they had to be. And this is the Depression, you know. This is after the Depression I'm talking about. Before, my daddy always said that if Roosevelt hadn't got in, that they would have died because it was just getting so bad. And, you know, people say, well, you live on the farm, you know, you can get out and plant something. Well, you can't if you don't have seed, if you don't have some kind of irrigation, you can't.
No. And just, you know, I think about why it was that my forebears came into the mountains. You know, one group of them were on the run. But another group of them were just probably tired of being worked to death. And if you think about it, Juanita, As hard as a farm life is, and as near to subsistence and starvation as it can be, it still had some small degree of leisure time in it as compared to a work week that was 84 hours long, 7 days a week.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'd have hightailed it for the hills, too. Because, working that stony soil for yourself beats the dickens.
If anybody can ever find it on the History Channel about the hill, they call about the hillbillies, and that was really eye-opening to me what all they did, they fought the British and everything, and why they got into, making booze and stuff, moonshine liquor and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I still remember the evening that we had our conversation with Jeff Biggers, and he said, you know what? Everybody jokes about hillbillies and moonshine, but you can't have moonshine unless you have crystal clear, perfect water.
Yeah, well, he's got a point there, hasn't he?
And when you lose your water, and this is another little piece of silly trivia, but we all know about Johnny Appleseed, right?
Yeah, yeah.
John Chapman was his name. He came down out of Pennsylvania with a boatload of seeds and apple saplings, got off in Marietta, Ohio, on the Ohio River, and started westward planting little orchards ahead of the settlers. Some of those orchards, in fact, still exist.
Wow.
But this is the important thing. We talk about stills and so forth. The trees that he brought, I couldn't pay you to eat an apple off one of those trees, Juanita. They're inedible. You can't make you can't can them, you can't cook them, you can't fry them, you can't bake them, you can't pie them, nothing. There's only one thing they're good for.
Liquor.
Squeezing and making hard cider.
Yeah.
Because all those fundamentalists coming across in the pioneer wave, they read their Bible and it said, don't drink the fruit of the grape, neither drink thou the beer. There's nothing in there about not getting a righteous old godly face on the hard cider.
Yeah.
Because every culture's got to, there's got to be some relaxation time, and the only time in history that there has been an overt rejection of the idea that leisure time is important within the grand scheme of human existence is the rise of the industrial state during the Industrial Revolution, where the only purpose of a human being was to be worked literally to death by the barons of industry.
Yeah,
the Rockefellers and the Mellons and the Carnegies and the Morgans and all of those monstrous SOBs self-made. Who defined the so-called Gilded Age.
Yeah.
They built castles, they built mansions, and they did it literally on the bones of people for whom they thought no more than they thought of a draft mule.
Yeah, oh, of course.
And that's our history, and it's a forgotten history, Juanita.
And that there's still people that they look down on, not only on blacks for that, and they look down on people like us. If we've got an accent, well, we're Hicks or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
And that you were talking about not wanting to say something in front of me, and believe me.
No, I was kidding. I was playing on it.
I mean, I thought that was sweet, but anyway, the thing is that I've been treated like a nothing, and you can imagine what. Like blacks, I mean, I know that.
Oh, sure.
As it was for us, it was a whole lot worse for them. Believe me, I saw it, and you did too.
I know. Juanita, awful good to talk to you this evening.
Okay, just one more thing I wanted to say about the obesity.
Oh, sure.
They got the hearing and all, and God bless Michelle. But they're not going to be able to do anything about that till our food changes.
Yeah, you can't eat. You can't. When the major source of food for a significant portion of the population is McDonald's, no, you're going to deal with obesity. I mean, I sat down at one of the great glories of these little road trips I take is that even though we work like draft animals, At the end of the day, Guy James and I sit down to a dinner, and there's no two human beings on planet Earth that enjoy a meal better than we do, as long as it's not chicken or fish,
yeah,
where
yeah,
Guy is
yeah,
concerned.
Yeah.
I got a needle in like that.
Be back on the radio?
We were talking about it. He's trying to, but again, there's a human being who's being worked like a draft animal. Guy James is working 7 days a week just trying to keep his head above water.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
So, you know, that's...
Okay.
You know, that's where that is. But, you know, we got to sit down. We got to sit down to a nice meal. And, you know, the funny thing is, I ate three meals a day in Pittsburgh, and, you know, and I'm not talking about eating opulent stuff, but I actually lost weight. I lost 5 or 6 pounds while I was up there.
Oh.
Just because we were on the go so much, and I wasn't constantly, you know, just plopped in this chair back here.
Maybe you were getting some good food.
Well, we had some mighty good stuff. We absolutely did.
It's just like down here, what you buy, you can't hardly find good hamburger anymore, you know. Or good meat, or I don't know. And we've got a lot of grocery stores here. You know, we're not without different. I mean, we don't have Albertsons anymore, but we've got, like, ever heard of Winn-Dixie and Puppy?
Oh, I grew up on Winn-Dixie.
Yeah. Everybody thinks that's the cheapest place to shop, but it ain't necessarily so.
No, not in the least.
We did have a cash and carry, but I think they were sold out.
Well, where I grew up down in Alabama, we had Winn-Dixie, and we had Kroger's, of course, and
we didn't have Kroger's.
We had a couple of others, but as soon as there was a big move on to bust the unions.
Oh yeah.
And that was the end of those major grocery chains where I grew up.
Well, there was Piggly Wiggly.
We had them.
And A&P.
Had them.
Yeah. Those are the ones I remember. But used to, you'd get most of your stuff at these little markets. You know, little mom and dad grocery stores where they mostly got sold beer.
Right.
A bunch of old drinking men hanging
out. Well, yeah, what we're referring to is it's a package store. It's a package store. It's not a beer store. It's a package store. Exactly.
Okay. Well, what's your little grandbaby's name?
Well, I've nicknamed him Ozzy.
Odd?
Ozzy.
Ozzy?
Yeah.
Like Ozzy Osbourne?
Well, no, not like that. That's, no, but yeah.
That's the same thing?
No, I nicknamed him after my great-grandfather, Ozias.
I'm just asking. I can't hear real good over this thing.
No, his real name is Benjamin, but I've nicknamed him Ozzy.
That was my daddy's first given name.
I'll be darned.
But he was a Benjamin Franklin. So he did away. He said, you don't need but one name, one first name.
Well, the little guy has the full...
He was a Frank.
Well, little guy has the full complement of names, and it's a dandy, but I nickname everybody and everything.
Yeah, uh-huh. Well, give him a little kiss for me.
I sure will. He's just as cute as can be and really good-natured. Seems like a good-natured little fellow.
Aren't they so precious? I mean, oh, my God, you could just...
You just look at them and melt. You do,
yeah.
and you just... It makes you time travel, Juanita, because all of a sudden, you know, granted, we got there's two other little grandbabies that are 3 and 2.
Yeah.
But with each one, you look at them, and it's like you redoubled in the realization of what you've got. I don't know how I can be a good enough. I don't know how I can ever be a good enough grandfather.
Yeah.
I have no doubt whatsoever that Agnes will be the maximum grandmother, but I don't know how I can ever be a good enough grandfather. You know, God put her on this planet to look after little bitty helpless babies. I mean, Agnes is the gold standard in newborn infant care.
Yeah. Well, we need a lot of her kind of people.
Indeed. Indeed.
Okay.
The world would be a better place. Juanita, have a good evening.
You too.
Bye now. That's our correspondent from Central Florida. That is, of course, Juanita. And you're not there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Jim. What's up?
Not a whole lot. Don't have a lot to say tonight, but one thing I have wanted to say for a long time. I always enjoy listening to Juanita. She is like a walking oral history of a part of this country that they're trying to eliminate from the history books.
She is indeed. Juanita, you'd be surprised, Jim. Juanita gets fan mail.
Well, I can see why she should. And if I knew her address, I would send one to her, too. But I always enjoy her plain-to-earth talk. And it's basically, like I say, she's a walking oral history. And one thing I wanted to mention, you know, you were talking about farm workers and stuff like that. Back when they passed Social Security, I don't think farm workers were allowed to participate, were they?
No, they were not. Nor were domestic servants.
Exactly.
Who were, of course, largely African-American.
Well, of course. I mean, it had all types of discriminatory things built into it, which thankfully has been rectified to a certain extent.
But you know what? I think that's part of why the right wing hates it so much, Jim.
Well, they want to destroy everything that has been done for the working man over the past 100 years.
Do you think if the Republican Party could bring back that 84-hour work week that I was just talking about, that they wouldn't do it yesterday?
Of course they would. They don't care. And those people back in the days of the industrial tycoons and the robber barons, they didn't care. And it took a lot of strong efforts to bring some of those people into line, if they had been brought into line. I guess it started, one of the things that started it was Teddy Roosevelt and busting up all those trusts, and then the labor leaders in the labor movement, starting with Gompers and Emma Thompson, and not Emma Thompson, but Emma Goldman, and, you know, they were called radical socialists and all types of terrible names. But, you know, it took that type of thing to break the iron hold that these people had.
But, Jim, it didn't stay broke.
No, and they're trying to reforge it and put it back together.
I mean, look at what I started talking about this evening, this business with Comcast buying NBC Universal. There is no way under a sane reading of the Sherman Act that should be allowed to go through. You don't allow that kind of concentration of ownership to take place because there has been a legislative public policy decision made in this country that is not good for the United States of America.
Well, that's monopoly. And that's what they're trying to establish, I would assume. I know Comcast is all over California and San Francisco.
Oh, it's all over the United States of America.
Really?
Yeah, I mean it's throughout the South. It's everywhere. It's got tentacles that have tentacles.
Well, I mean, that's exactly what they're like, a huge octopus or a huge anaconda. And once they establish their hegemony and they start to control and monopolize, they can just do what the hell they want to.
And the model is repeated time after time after time, Jim, in so many different so many different arenas. Look what happens when Walmart comes to a town. You know, for the first 6 months or so, Walmart will have lower prices than anybody else around until they've begun to drive people out of business. The minute they've driven the mom and pops out of business, the prices go right back up.
I know it. And, you know, the thing is, they don't even buy the land that they build a store on. They lease it so they don't have to pay property taxes. Isn't that right?
Yes, it is.
And then, of course, they are able to take their employees and teach them how to get on public assistance because they won't give them enough hours so they can have any kind of benefits. And the benefits they do have are so adulterated they may as well not have any at all.
Well, within 30 miles of where I am right now, Jim, I can go to two abandoned Walmart stores, and they're just sitting there. One of them has a free clothing mission in it, and the other one's just sitting there, an eyesore. And they're just big bot. You know, what can you do with one? They are the worst kind of landscaping blight.
Of course they are.
But they don't even exist on Walmart's books anymore.
No. And here's an interesting thing about the Walton family. I saw a documentary about them about a year ago, and they have some type of survival compound that they have built that probably would rival that of the President of the United States.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, you know,
there are the liaison offices of some foreign countries in Bentonville, Arkansas, are more highly staffed numerically speaking, and are more ornate and lavish than their own embassies to the United States.
Oh, I don't doubt that at all. Well, as I said before, I don't have a whole lot to say. And what you said about your beloved spouse, I think maybe some of these real right-to-lifers could take a lesson from her as to how to take care of children, because it seems like these right-to-lifers, once a baby is born, they don't give a damn about it.
They're not pro-life. They're pro-fetus.
That's it. So, I mean, you know, they could take a lesson from the care that your wife obviously has provided her children and her grandchildren, and that's certainly a wonderful thing. It really is. You're very fortunate.
I am, and I recognize that every day.
Well, again, my compliments to Juanita, because, like I say, a lot of people just don't understand and realize what she's talking about and the times that she's grown up in and the hardship she's endured living where she lived and having to do what she's done. And I'm glad she's there to share that with us.
Well, she is that pearl of great price, without a doubt, Jim.
Okay, you have a good evening and a good broadcast.
All right, thank you, Jim. Take care.
Good night, sir.
Bye now. Jim calling from not too awfully far away from here. Jim brings a lot to the program as well. You all do. That's what makes this such a joy to do. And lo and behold, her ears must have been burning, because Agnes has walked into the studio here to, lo and behold, check on me and make sure I had sufficient beverage to get me through the program.
It's my job. Plus, I miss all of you.
But dear, no, we've been singing your praises. Okay. Talking about, you know, you are the gold standard in newborn care. Well, you are.
I like babies.
She does. She does. She says they smell like cookies.
They do.
Yes. You're leaning over the microphone.
I was leaning to give you a peck on the cheek. Hi, sis. Hi, moms.
There we go.
Hi, Lottie. Hi, Gene.
You know, we may have to start Agnes's romper room on the horn. I don't know. Hey, everybody. Yeah, you're right, MM, in the chat room. It's not just so much love. No, they don't love the fetus, these right-wingers. The fetus is a hand puppet. The fetus is a stage prop for the fact that, yes, you're absolutely correct. They want to control, they want absolute unyielding control over women. It doesn't get any plainer. So we will take our top of the hour break. We are 2 hours into the program, and I will get to the pig story, and I will get to the, well, I got a bunch of stories. Wait. There's nobody blinking right now, so I know I can get to this. We travel, friends and neighbors, to Texas. Yes, yes, yes. We had the Texas. You've heard of the Texas two-step. Maybe Tuesday needs to be Texas Tuesday. You've heard of Texas toast, Texas steps. Maybe we need Texas Tuesdays. Because last night, Moran Monday, we had that Texas dinosaur that has been named scientifically, no less, hard-headed Texan. No kidding. And tonight, well, it's not a dinosaur, it's a human being. In particular, it's a pair of human beings, a pair of married human beings who happen to, you know, go up to that den of iniquity, Sodom on the northeast seacoast, Massachusetts, namely Angelique Naylor. Angelique Naylor got married to Sabina Daly. They married in Massachusetts in 2004. They adopted a child. They went home to Texas. you know what? Sometimes marriages don't last. They just don't. And this one didn't. You know, this is not an indictment by any stretch of the imagination of the idea of marriage any more than the 50% of all marriages that end in divorce in this country. It's not an indictment of gay marriage. It's just, sadly, one that didn't work. Associated Press story reads as follows. After the joy of a wedding and the adoption of a baby came arguments that couldn't be resolved, leading Angelique Naylor to file for divorce in Texas. I added the in Texas part. That left her fighting both the woman she married in Massachusetts and the state of Texas. Here's the punchline, which says a union granted in a state where same-sex marriage is legal can't be dissolved with a divorce in a state where it's not. That's just nuts. Hello, you know, and these opinions are coming from the crowd that believes, you know, we gotta adhere strictly to the fundamental basics of your Constitution there, you know, the part that says one nation under God. Well, the divorce was handled in that little communist wonderland in Texas, known as Austin. And the judge, the family law judge in Austin, or the judge overseeing the family law proceedings in Austin, did what the judge should do under the statutes that exist that govern dissolution of marriage in the state of Texas. The judge granted the divorce. Enter stage right wing, Texas Attorney General Greg Abbott. Texas Attorney General Greg Abbott, and I'm sure he's in on the health care lawsuit, too. Government can't compel you to buy nothing you don't want to buy. Texas Attorney General Greg Abbott, he wasn't the lawyer for either Ms. Daly or Ms. Naylor. He's just nosy. That's why he's just nosy. And Greg Abbott, who ain't part of the marriage, is appealing the judge's order granting the divorce. Texas, the Attorney General of Texas, with the full weight of legal enforcement in the state of Texas clothing him, has decided that he has a stake in a divorce between two individual citizens of the state of Texas and the United States of America. He's also decided to, you gotta wonder, Greg Abbott must get around. He's also decided to appeal the divorce that was granted to a gay couple in Dallas. Rationale? Oh, sit down. Rationale? Protecting the traditional definition of marriage means doing the same for divorce. We gotta have good, godly, upstanding divorce. But wait! Jesus condemns people who get divorced to hell in the New Testament. He does. It's there. I've read it. An appeals court in the state of Texas will hear oral arguments in the Dallas divorce case on Wednesday. That would be tomorrow. The only rational thing to do is to look at Texas Attorney General Greg Abbott and say, you do not have standing in this case. Because you weren't one of the married people involved. And I, the judge, hereby award sanctions against you and in favor of the litigants who are having to litigate this against you. Because, see, Greg Abbott, the Attorney General of Texas, should be impeached and removed from office for his violation of the rules of professional conduct, because he is using his office as a cudgel against people who have done no harm to him or what is referred to frequently in the law as the peace and dignity of the state of Texas. Well, it was violating our peace and dignity. These here lesbos was down here running around saying they was married because they got married up there amongst them Yankees. They'll put up with anything amongst them Yankees will. But there's this little thing in the Constitution called full faith and credit. In other words, things decided, things, rights granted in one state have to more or less be honored in another state. Like, okay, you got your driver's license in California. You happen to be rolling through West Virginia when you get stopped. The West Virginia authorities cannot, and I mean, there are Supreme Court decisions on precisely this point, driver's licenses. They haven't had to do with Massachusetts and New York. The West Virginia law enforcement couldn't arrest you and throw you in the hoosegow because you didn't have a West Virginia driver's license. Because the court early on said, look, that would be stupid. You got to stop and get a driver's license every state you go through? That's unworkable. And we're talking about driver's licenses back when they were talking about horseless carriages, okay? Full faith and credit. The full faith and credit clause means that full faith and credit is extended among the several states so that we don't wind up in messes like that. But not in Texas. No, in Texas, traditional family values mean we gotta protect traditional family values divorce. And so it is that Angelique Naylor finds herself embroiled in litigation. What happens if Texas Attorney General Greg Abbott wins? Well, couples like Naylor and Daley won't be able to get a divorce anywhere in the United States. Because, for instance, Ms. Daley and Ms. Naylor are both residents and citizens of the state of Texas. If they were to go back to Massachusetts where they were married, Massachusetts law, Massachusetts is a commonwealth, I do believe, isn't it? The Commonwealth of Massachusetts requires that at least one of the litigants in the divorce action be an actual, honest-to-God, bona fide resident of Massachusetts, which neither Ms. Daley nor Ms. Naylor are. So what Texas Attorney General Greg Abbott seeks to do is to impose a massive financial burden on one or both of these women in order for them to be able to dissolve a marriage that just didn't work. I wish every marriage between gay people worked. I wish every marriage between hetero people worked. There are massive, massive social problems that arise out of divorce. But we've also seen what happens in countries where divorce is not legal. That doesn't work either. The most you can hope for is to dissolve the marriage and hope that nobody kills anybody. And that the children don't suffer. Does Texas elect its attorney general? That is a question, the answer to which I do not know. But there should be already, without a doubt, there should be an ethics complaint filed with the state bar of Texas seeking the removal and the disbarment of Texas Attorney General Greg Abbott for this manifest misuse, this disgusting display of bigotry that he has put out there for all and sundry, simply as nothing more than putting a living face on his hate, his homophobia, and his overall sickening bigotry. 9 minutes after the hour, we're going to take our top of the hour break now. We'll come back with your phone calls, I hope. 877-443-7425. 2366-877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice, and we badly need that support. This is The Horn. We'll be back.
Our little boy is 4 years old and quite a little man. So we spell out the words we don't want him to understand. Like T-O-Y or maybe S-U-R-P-R-I-S-E. But the words we're hiding from him now tear the heart right out of me. Our D-I-V-O-R-C-E becomes mine of the day. Me and little J-O-E will be going away. I love you both and this will be pure H-E-double-L for me. Oh, I wish that we could stop this D-I-V-O-R-C-E. Watch him smile, he thinks it's Christmas or his fifth birthday. And he thinks C-U-S-T-O-G-Y spells fun or play. I spell out all the hurting words and turn my head when I speak. Cause I can't spell away this hurt that's dripping down my cheek. Our D-I-V-O-R-C-E becomes final.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
And of course, in that story about Ms. Naylor, you will not find any remarks from the teabaggers about government overreaching into the lives of ordinary Americans. Because those are the ordinary Americans that the teabaggers want to overreach into their lives. God, I despise them. I wouldn't pee in their mouths if their guts were on fire. I bet you I couldn't say that on the public terrestrial airwaves. But it's true. I loathe the teabaggers. Maura just dropped me a note. She said, unless I'm mistaken, DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, negates the full faith and credit clause. It may try to, but DOMA is merely a piece of legislation. See, this thing, this little old D-I-V-O-R-C-E down in T-E-X-A-S, may have ramifications that wind up answering a lot of questions, because it's a simple rule of legal construction that where a statute conflicts with the Constitution, the statute always loses. You know, and to that extent, I mean, I don't want to give them any grist for their mill or anything, but the wingnuts are right. You know, they want a constitutional amendment defining marriage. The only problem is, well, what was the theme of the show at the beginning? Hard cases make bad law. And they don't want it as much as they think they do. And frankly, if the federal DOMA comes into conflict with full faith and credit, which is a constitutional provision, DOMA loses. Just like, would a saving clause save it, you know, so that you could just blue pencil the full faith and credit part? I don't know. Because the Supreme Court said today in this First Amendment case that the saving clause in that said the statute shall not be used in the prosecution of anything, artistic, political, educational, scientific, yada, yada, yada. That didn't, John Roberts, 8-1, said that didn't save the anti-crush video legislation that was used to prosecute that monster who sat around videoing pit bull fights. Sick bastard. So, but moreover, what kind of miserable, godforsaken, sick, misogynistic, holier-than-thou, self-righteous, punk-ass bastard is this Greg Abbott in Texas? Who does he think he is? A divorce is a miserable affair. There are no fun ones. Even people who have had 7 or 8 marriages, ask Larry King, they don't enjoy the divorces. It's no fun when that commitment comes crashing down around you. It's not pleasurable. It is hell. And that Tammy Wynette song, that's a heartbreaker. Because the process is heartbreaking. And that some miserable, soulless, paper shuffler, what did John Wayne call him in True Grit? Pettifogging lawyer would inject himself into that little slice of hell. Well, there is a word for people who have no conscience, and it applies to Texas Attorney General Greg Abbott, and I don't know if he's a Republican or a Democrat, and I frankly don't care. Although I'll probably get an email saying that, you know, this is some sort of stealth attempt to strike a blow for marriage equity. Well, if it is, that's, you know, the 9 levels of chess that I'm unable to play. Because it still uses human beings as some sort of fodder. Moving on, because it's quiet here. Now, don't do this to me. Don't do this to me. Don't light up all 6 lines 15 minutes before the show ends and then send me an email about how you couldn't get on the program. There is no screening here, and everybody is welcome. But it's within a certain time frame. Another story that's out there that sort of begs telling this evening. It is the story... It is the story of a young woman by the name of Tashima Crudup. She is a young woman. She is in her late 20s. She has struggled all her life to make something of herself, as the saying goes. She's a mother. She reached the age of 26 because... At a tender age, she was removed from the home of her grandmother. And she went through a series of foster homes, some caring, some not so much. But as she grew to adulthood and pursued her education, she maintained in the back of her mind that when she became an adult, she wanted to be someone who could be there for a child in need. She wanted, in short, to be a foster parent. She wanted to stand in the breach for children whose little lives have already been made, to one degree or another, hell on earth. No particular child, she just wanted to be there. She wanted to be part of the foster care system in the state of Maryland. And so she applied to be a foster parent with an organization called Contemporary Family Services. Now, this is a private organization that does foster parent placement, foster child placement. They describe themselves as, quote, authorized by the state to place foster children with families. She applied, Ms. Crudup did. She applied with Contemporary Family Services. She went through 50 hours. 50 hours of parenting classes. She jumped hurdle after hurdle of what should be a rather rigorous, look, no, I don't want to just let anybody be a foster parent. It is a rigorous process, or should be a rigorous process, to be approved as a foster parent in any state. These are the most fragile children in our society, and they deserve the absolute best, most diligent efforts we can muster to make sure that out of bad circumstances we do not place them into worse. Tasha McCrudup went through that whole process. She passed with flying colors. A social worker, because, you know, never mind whether the child is fed, never mind whether the child is appropriately clothed, never mind whether it meets its growth and development benchmarks. No, by God, we've got to make sure that they can have some good religion. Hot diggity. Glory. Pass the snake. And a social worker who visited with Ms. Crudup filed a report saying that she was, quote, accepting of religious practices other than her own, and was willing to, quote, make arrangements to have a child attend the church of his or her own choice if so requested.
I want to be a Baptist.
Well, okay, it's your choice, kid.
I want to be a snake handler.
Mm-hmm. Here's a baby copperhead. Let's try that first. So all that's noted, and then what happened? Contemporary Family Services rejected Tasha McCrudup's application. Why? What went wrong? Did they hide a little tiny camera inside her house during one of the home visits so that they could see what she was really like? Did they see the bondage parties or maybe the sessions where Ms. Crudup was involved in making crush videos? No! Did they find out that she had a prior history of abusing children, that she had somehow surreptitiously and maliciously and with malice aforethought hidden from Contemporary Family Services? No. I wish it was that complicated. I wish it was that nefarious. I wish the answer wasn't what the answer is. And, of course, you know that I'm building to the answer, and shame on me. I should just report the damn news. But this is sickening. Contemporary Family Services of Maryland rejected the application of Tasha McCrudup because she's a Muslim. She is a practicing Muslim. Really? Well, no, it's not just because she's a practicing Muslim. It's because, as a practicing Muslim, she won't keep pork in her house. One wonders if the same standard has been applied to observant Jewish foster families. Because, you know, they're not crazy about the barbecued ribs either. Me, I say yummy. Muslims, Jews, no pig. The company said in a letter to Ms. Crudup that it respects her personal religious views and practices. However, they want to ensure that the religious, cultural, and personal rights of each foster child are upheld. Really? I'm well aware. I mean, you know, I've studied me some religion and stuff. And I'm pretty well aware of the prohibition on the eating of pork in the Jewish faith and the Muslim faith. I know. Hey, look, their loss, more for me. I can't imagine living a life without barbecue. You know, my same argument for not being a vegetarian. Life without barbecue ain't much of a life. But, you know, I'm a hillbilly. I'm a redneck. It's one of the basic food groups, you know, grains, fruits, meats, barbecue. But I am not aware of any religion that openly requires the consumption of pork. Now, I know in the days of the Inquisition, as run by the Roman Catholic Church, that they would sometimes test what were called conversos. Those would mainly be Jews who didn't want to leave Spain when they were driven out by Isabella and Ferdinand and chose to instead convert to ostensibly to the Roman Catholic faith. And every now and then the bishop would come around and say, "Ooh-wee, pickled pig's feet for dinner. Hey, converso, pass me the pickled pig's feet and take two for yourself." Just to make sure that they really had converted and were really, really Catholic now. Is that what this is? Contemporary Family Services of Maryland worried that if there's no pork in the house, that Miss Crudup might secretly be turning them toward Allah? What other answer is there? Well, fortunately, the American Civil Liberties Union chapter in Maryland has taken up Miss Crudup's case, and they are suing Contemporary Family Services. Ajmal Qureshi is an attorney with the ACLU and said, "I have a hard time believing the company denies every vegetarian or Orthodox Jewish person a foster care license." The Maryland Department of Human Resources ain't none too happy neither. The Maryland DHR said, quote, "The law does not permit the agency to make a determination solely on the type of food served in a home." I keep finding myself saying this, and yet I do. It's 2010. And there is no shortage of precious children desperately in need of a caring home. We have a surfeit of them, one might say. I think I used that word correctly. And what's interesting in this story is that there's no name. This is just the nameless action of a corporation that hustles children. That hustles children through a foster care system. There's no name of any person that we can hold up and say, see the bigot. This is heartbreaking. The Baltimore Sun has opined and said there are, there are thousands of kids across the state who desperately need stable homes and loving caretakers. That's what foster care and adoption officials should be focusing on, not on which meat dish gets put on the table every night. This is so irrational as to be ludicrous. There is no other answer to this. You know, this isn't one of those Sherlock Holmes moments where once you've eliminated all the impossibles, whatever's left, no matter how improbable, is the answer. There are no other potential. This business about, we want to make sure that the religious, cultural, and personal rights of each foster child is upheld. The woman has already stated that she will honor any religious beliefs of any foster child that comes her way. You know, what is there some freak inside Contemporary Family Services that thinks that that Ms. Crudup, Tasha McCrudup, that she's got some sort of scimitar hidden away in the bedroom and she'll lop off the kid's head if he doesn't throw the rug down and pray toward Mecca? I mean, that's the kind of ignorant, benighted thinking that can't help but undergird a decision like this. I will bet you a dollar to a donut if we could find the name of the person who made this decision and trail them for 2 weeks, we'd find them going to some fundamentalist church somewhere in Maryland. I will bet you. Because those are the people who think this way. Because they've been fed a steady diet for decades now about how the Muslims insist that everybody, you know, their goal is world Muslim domination with a hereditary caliphate. You know what? There are some freak Muslims out there who do have that goal. The vast majority, however, just want to go about their daily lives. And you know what? As much as I love barbecue, I can't help but acknowledge the fact that they're probably eating better because they're not eating the greasy pig. Same for the observant Jews. But damn, it's tasty. What? Are they afraid that? Because the remedy is easy. I mean, even if there was a Polynesian child who had to eat ceremonial pork dishes in celebration of the volcano fire goddess Pele, even if that child was out there in the system, it's easy enough not to place the child where there ain't no pork. Instead, we just get another sickening piece of bigotry, and I hate it. We're going to take a break. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
darkness in my heart. I saw the signs of my undoing. They had been there from the start. And the darkness still has work to do. The knotted cords untying. The heated and the holy, oh, they're sitting there on high. So secure with everything they're buying. In the blood of Jesus.
Already coming across saying, Bob, what's that song? That's from Peter Gabriel, backing vocals by Sinead O'Connor. That is Blood of Eden. I've been on a Peter Gabriel kick lately. You know, I take these things by fits and starts and can't resist sharing when I do. Well, I don't mean sharing like file sharing, okay? I mean, calm down. But just sharing what's good out there. And you know, I'm astonished by this stuff. I'm astonished by stories like Ms. Crudup's and the story of these women in Texas who are having to fight like demons are on their trail. just to get something as simple as a divorce. And the fact that, of course, the teabaggers, like I said, are as quiet as the grave, because this isn't something they care about, because it actually has something to do with real human beings' lives, and they can't tie it to hating the black man in the White House. But God knows, the level of cognitive dissonance that's required to be a teabagger is absolutely astonishing. This story goes back to April 15th, and it comes out of the Boston Globe. The headline simply says, Tea Party Rally Generates Plenty of Criticism, Opposing Views. Given the body of the article, it should have been headlined, Teabaggers Are Dumber Than Damn Dirt. But we can't talk truth, you know, empirical facts about the teabaggers, because they might get upset and shoot somebody. So we have to sort of tap dance around them. Effing idiots. Let me just share with you directly from the article itself. It will be easier on me that way, if you don't mind. They were enraged about the growing cost. This thing has a punchline, by the way. It really does. You just can't miss this. I seldom see journalism with punchlines, but this one has one. They were enraged about the growing costs of entitlements, the surging national debt, and everything from the bailouts of the banks to the new health care law. Referring to April the 14th. Early yesterday morning, Valerie and Rob Shirk corralled, what a word for children. Early yesterday morning, Valerie and Rob Shirk corralled their 10 homeschooled children into their van for the 2.5-hour drive from their home in Connecticut to Boston, arriving just in time to hear Sarah Palin denounce government-run health care at the Tea Party Movement rally on Boston Common. There's irony number one. They had it on the Boston Common. The Boston Common. Oh, it's rich. It is, as Daffy Duck would say, to laugh. That socialist Boston Common. They thought, talking about the Shirks, irony name too, the Shirks, they thought it would be a learning opportunity for their children, who range in age from 9 months to 15 years old. And I'm the one who said that if Agnes hadn't, that we would have been the Waltons. There's the Waltons. Right-wing Waltons. Good night, Adolf boy. Good night, Himmler girl. They thought it would be a learning opportunity for their children, who range in age from 9 months to 15 years old, and who held up signs criticizing the government for defying the, quote, will of the people, unquote. Now we all understand that the will of the people is that there never be a black man in the White House. That's how we're defining will of the people when we have to talk about teabaggers. Because that's what they're mad about. That one. In the White House. That's why it's called a White House. It's not supposed to have brown people in it unless they're liveried servants putting the soup in front of the white people. But anyway, that's not in the news story. They thought it would be a learning opportunity for their children, who range in age from 9 months to 15 years old, and who held up signs criticizing the government for defying the will of the people. Quote, "The problem in this country is that too many people are looking for handouts," said Valerie Shirk, 43, of Prospect Con. "I agree with the signs that say, share my father's work ethic, not his paycheck. We have to do something about the whole welfare mentality in this country." The Shirks were among thousands of people who attended the rally from around the region, many of them carrying signs with slogans such as, What part of live free or die don't you understand? I can't do the accent. You know, that's one of those accents that I just can't do on demand up east. I got to work on that. What part of live free or die don't you understand? Don't tread on me and starve the beast by tax cuts. Pepperidge Farm remembers. Okay, see, with a little warm-up, it's not so bad. Some of those attending, I added the Pepperidge Farm part. Some of those attending said the health bill's requirement to buy health insurance signaled the arrival of communism in America. Shh. You know, they're having so much fun having a hissy about it. Let's not tell them that it isn't in the bill anymore. It's not in the law. It ain't there. Shh. Don't disturb the teabaggers. They have guns. They'll shoot you for saying it's not there. Gene Theroux of Springfield, Mass., held up a sign that read, "Against Progressivism." That would be a Beck viewer. Which he said meant he was protesting the movement to socialism and the United Nations sovereignty violations against the United States. Okay, see, there you've got the perfect nexus between Glenn Beck and Birchers. Because, Jesus, I remember, I learned to read, and this is not bragging, I learned to read when I was 2 and a half. And I remember reading things when I was 4 and 5 years old. And I remember the bumper stickers, around Alabama where I was growing up. I remember the bumper stickers that said, "Get us out of the UN." And then under a little, under it in fine print, John Birch Society. That was before it had .org behind it. No, I didn't see it in traffic. I studied it at close range. It was on one of the neighbor's cars! The 57-year-old retired Air Force Chief Master Sergeant, that would be Gene Theroux, said he likes his government-run health care administered by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, but he worries about what will happen when some 30 million newly insured Americans enter the system. Well, they'll go to the doctor. Stop worrying, Gene. Stress is bad for you. Not News Ninja Gene, the teabagging Gene Theroux. Where does it say in the Constitution that there's a mandate for all Americans to have health care? He said, "This bill will ravage the health care that I get." Oh, I got mine, so screw you. Oh, we understand Gino so well now, don't we? Then there's Lindsay Lacombe, L-A-C-O-M-B-E, who wore an "I Love Fox News" t-shirt and drove in from Fitchburg in part to protest the health care reforms. Lindsay Lacombe, 22 years old, a junior at Fitchburg State College, said, "This was just something I really wanted to participate in. I don't understand how everyone can get free health care. It's not right." When it was explained that the new law requires many of the newly insured to make some contribution toward their health insurance, Lindsay Lacombe said, "I'm not a political science major." That was almost South Carolina, wasn't it? Sorry. Doing my best! You see how that is? If you challenge them, just like the article by Ellis Weiner, that I quoted at the top of the program said, if you challenge them, they fall back on, "I don't know nothing about birthing no babies." Others came to protest the protesters. This thing, it goes on and on. Taylor Light, 19, a sophomore at Emerson College, held up a sign that read, "Get off our socialist commons." Good! But please, please, Taylor, be careful. These idiots have guns with bullets in them. And they're not real bright about when to use them or not. And then a 21-year-old Eunice Co. Was handing out a pamphlet for the informed Tea Party member. All chock full of statistics that, and facts, you know, those things that the teabaggers hate. But like I said, there is a punchline in this story. And it's precious. But let's do this. Let's finish with the setup. Remember the Shirks? The Shirks. With their 10 babies ranging in age from 9 months to 15 years. Oh, Agnes, it could have been us. Yeah, you didn't hear the "not a chance" part of that. Anna Kazalka, 59, of Hanover, said she pays $1,300 a month for health insurance to cover her and her husband and came to the rally because she feared the new health care law will make her coverage even more expensive. She was with her sister, who recently lost her job, and blamed President Obama. I hear it's tough when he looks at you and says you're fired. Gazalka said, he's a communist and all about the redistribution of wealth. It's just the minorities and the illegals who are getting the benefits. Everybody who works gets nothing. Here's the punchline. For the Shirks, it was a day for their children. Oh, wait a minute. This is almost Garrison Keillor. For the Shirks, it was a day for their children to seek inspiration from Palin and the other speakers who questioned Obama's patriotism, and at least one of whom referred to him repeatedly as Barack Hussein. Then my Garrison's not working tonight. The couple, here's the punchline. This is the good part. The Shirks. Remember the Shirks? This is about the Shirks. The couple who rely on Medicaid for their health care. We're also upset about the nation's new health reforms. Ginsu commercial, there's more. Just got to kind of collect myself for this one. When asked why her family used state-subsidized health care when she criticized people who take handouts, Valerie Shirk said she did not want to stop having children and that her husband's income was not enough to cover the family with private insurance.
I know there's a dichotomy because of what we get from the state, but I just look at each of my children as a blessing.
Well, okay, then you're not twisted into a pretzel anymore, Mrs. Shirk. As long as you look at your children as a blessing, then the fact that you're protesting people taking government handouts while you're taking government handouts, well, that doesn't make you a hypocrite in the least now, does it?
How are you supposed to... I keep hearing people on our side, you know, liberals, that want to have a dialogue with these goobers. How are we supposed to dialogue with that?
Mrs. Shirk, you're criticizing people for taking government handouts, but you're taking about 9 times your fair share, sister.
Well, but I look at them as a blessing.
Well, okay, sure. You know, Bugs Bunny moment where he holds up the poster, screw, other poster, ball.
And there's more. God, I got another hour's worth more, but we're out of show. The Arizona legislature has passed a law saying that Barack Obama has to bring them his long-form birth certificate. Really? Oddly enough, they're not asking for the birth certificate of John McCain, who is their very own senator, who was born in Panama. And I don't mean the canal zone. He was born outside the canal zone. He's a born Panamanian. Or in his case, perhaps Panamaniac. What's left? What's left except that the fact that these people are driven absolutely batshit insane by the fact that Barack Obama's got a better tan than John Boehner? What's left? I submit to you that the answer is nothing, because that's the answer. That's all there is. And maybe it's a little hard to get your head around. Maybe it's a little hard for rational, reasonable, fact-driven people to understand that wingnuts are like that. But for God's sakes, I guess we'll end the program the way we ended it last night. Consider what their leader is telling them.
Yesterday, when I got off the air, I had a conversation between Pat and myself, and it led to a meeting last night. Because I'm going to change the TV show again, and I mentioned it last night that I felt like we were circling an airport,
he's going to change the TV show again? Now with 10% more crazy? What?
And I know the landing strip is down there, but the lights aren't on. And I can't see it yet, but I know we're close and we're circling. And that's just not good enough. And I tell you, you don't know. Just like I'm...
Here's hoping the pilot's not certified for IFR, but I'm just saying.
I don't really know you. And I know in generalities how hard you work and what you do and what your life is like.
Bullshit, he said to Robin, and he turned and walked away. Glenn Beck doesn't know anything about working people. Except maybe what he almost forgot back in his drug-addled, hazy days of being a morning zoo crew DJ. He knows nothing. No.
I don't.
Right.
I know in generalities. And the same with you with me. We just have to trust each other that we are both doing everything in our power. And I have asked you recently, if you're not doing that, to decide. Because now is the time. Are you here to relax and be entertained?
Damn, this is an altar call.
Or are you here? Will you pick up the mantle left to you by the founders to be a guardian of man's freedom? Will you do it? Because your children will ask.
All 10 of them that are on Medicaid will ask.
What did you do?
Took the Medicaid.
I believe your God will ask you, what did you do?
Protested the Negro. Well, good, because I'm a white God.
We all find ourselves at a certain place at a certain time, and we may not even know what the role is that we're supposed to play. We may not, in the end, we may not even know how much we affected different things. But we each are here and experience everything for a reason.
You know, if you listen to the compression behind, this is just a radio geek moment. If you listen to the compression behind this guy's voice, I have a sneaking suspicion that when he goes out into public and he doesn't have the compressor on his mic, he probably sounds like this. Because what you're hearing there is artificial balls. You know, that Statler Brothers bass. You know, I've worked hard to get this voice. Him, not so much.
Reason. That's why I asked you yesterday, do not accept coincidence in your life. Look for the answers.
Yeah, because the Glenn Beck Show is definitely not a boating accident. It's a freaking train wreck.
Of your life. Look for your answers in your life through coincidence, because there's no such thing as a coincidence.
Tomorrow on Glenn Beck, he'll be playing Captain and Tennille records backwards. Because there are no coincidences.
Linda, who just had this amazing phone call about 20 minutes ago on this program, she said, will you just put out your plan? Hey, I'm working on it.
It's only coming out in August after it's been thoroughly marketed, focus group tested, and there's a book coming that can come out to support it. Out of the wallets of you useful idiots that listen to the program. See, that's how the dodge works. I got to write a book.
But the most important plan that I...
No, I don't. I've got 5 years of book under my belt. Because, see, that's how Wingnut talk hosts turn out the books. They get their rants transcribed, and then they stitch them together with a little bit of ad liberandum and insanity, and they call it a bestseller. See, I told you I was right. That's how that you think Rush Limbaugh just sat down and decided it was a dark and stormy night, my friends? No, these are all transcripts. These are nothing but transcripts from the stinking programs. But anyway, we're out of time. And somewhere along in here, he says the following: God is giving a plan, I think, to me. God wants us to stand peacefully, quietly, but with anger. This crazy-ass bastard, his magic Mormon underwear is a little bit too tight, and he thinks that he's another prophet. Oh, cue up Patsy Cline singing crazy. So we're at the end of the program. And now you know, with that idiot, with that psychopath, with that Lonesome Rhodes leading them, is it any wonder that Mrs. Shirk can sit there and tell the reporter from the Boston Globe, well, I'm taking handouts that I criticize everybody else for taking, but I take mine because I look at my children as a blessing and I didn't want to quit having babies because I think my vagina is a clown car. Jesus. So, the prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow night. Get your sacramental vestments out. And listen, we're at 3 weeks now. You know, I told you that because of what seemed like a little miracle, we had gotten halfway to our March monthly fundraising goal in the first week of March. And then, with a very few minor exceptions, not minor, but with a very few exceptions, it all dried up. And so we are precisely, we're almost exactly where we were. We're about $800 away from the March fundraising goal. I don't like mentioning this. You're tired of me mentioning it, but I don't get a choice. Because this apparently has value for you. This has meaning. Because you're out there and you're tuning in and you're telling your friends and the show is growing. Grows every day almost. And we have to struggle. We need your help. God, that's like a line from Galaxy Quest. We need your help. We do. This doesn't happen without you. If you can and you're able, don't do anything to harm your own well-being. But if you can and you're able, if you can hit the PayPal button or send something on the snail mail address and help us reach our monthly goal, it would sure be nice. And you have thanks beyond thanks. If you give above the $75 level, you will be the proud owner of one of the few remaining For the Love of West Virginia prints, if you don't already have one. Worth thinking about. You can just use the PayPal button and give me a message, or you can use the clickable link there on headonradionetwork.com. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go, from our web mistress and the chat room den mother, Sue, to Lottie in the chat room, to our news ninjas Gene and Susan, our blogger Texas Betsy, our southeast correspondent Matt Osborne of OsborneInc.com, OsborneInc.com, our correspondents on the network website, Reverbo and Sue, otherwise known as the Random Keyboard. Thank you. Thank you to my head writer, David in Tennessee. Thank you to Peter Godbold, whose work yet remains and helps keep me sane. To John Fox, our chief engineer and host of All Foxed Up on Sunday nights. And to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk. And thanks, of course, always to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Go. Head on. on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
Welcome to this Tuesday evening edition of The Horn. Tuesday afternoon, Tuesday morning, sometimes Wednesday morning.
Hey, just glad you're here.
Glad you're along for the little three-hour ride this evening. I suspect we've got some catching up to do from last night's Moran Monday edition, because we ran out of time before we ran out of Morans. And then there's, you know, news that actually happened today, and we'll catch up with that too. We've got, you know, I'm inclined to start. Well, okay, let me start with a correction, and never let it be said that I don't admit when I screw up. And you know, that's one of those things that just sets us so dramatically apart from right-wing radio. It's not that they're never wrong. They are almost consistently always wrong. They just won't admit it. I, however, will. I was doing my daily wander over at Crooks and Liars earlier today. And apparently, this business of the Right Network that we talked about last night at the beginning of the program, well, it really is for real, but Comcast is doing everything in its power to make it plain that it has nothing to do with funding it. Apparently that was started by a little bit of advocacy on the part of the fine folks over at Crooks and Liars, because it had that post had a lot of damning evidence in it. Because, you see, Comcast is very much in the middle of a great big buyout of, NBC. Hey, that'll be good. How in God's name could that possibly pass any sort of antitrust muster? I don't know. Included in the deal, by the way, will be MSNBC. Gee, it was nice. Sure did enjoy having your program, Keith, Rachel. That was real nice while it lasted. Because, well, I'm suspicious of the thugs at Comcast's willingness to continue to run it. That's all it is. It's my suspicion. It's no hard fact or anything. But Kelsey Grammer, remember Frasier? You know, it was one of the wittiest programs on television. And Kelsey Grammer turns out to be a disgusting wingnut. And you know what? You tell me, is this a personality flaw on my part? A character flaw? When I find out that somebody is a hardcore disgusting wingnut, I can hardly stand